and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for October 7th. My goodness, it's brought to you in part by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and with me in nice and cool Tokyo, although we're separated by what? How far are you from me?
Oh, maybe 5 miles or so.
Okay, 5 miles. It's Jim Allen. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. 5 miles away.
I think it's a little bit longer than 5 miles. I ran down that way before, and I think it's more like... It's closer to 10 than it is to 5. So you're safe.
Well, no, not if you've been running down this way. I think I got to be looking to increase the yardage here.
You can increase the yardage, but, man, don't do like all these baseball players have been doing late in the season here and just announce your retirement. Don't do that.
No retirement in the foreseeable future.
All right, and keep your average up for me.
I'm not sure.
Or is it? I wasn't average.
I wasn't keeping score, man. What do you do when your best friend's like keeping score on you? Well, my typo average in my stories, or what? How many corrections get republished?
I don't know. I don't get to see all that many of your stories. But on this week, we've got a story where we're talking to Brian Bullington of the Hiroshima Carp. We're going to discuss the Pacific League and Central League Climax Series matchups. We're going to look at the race in the Pacific League and the rash of retirees and a whole bunch more. The bases are juiced. Let's get started.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so I put out an email to Brian Bullington probably early in the week. I want to say Tuesday or Wednesday, and I got a response from him on Friday night.
Wow.
And we talked via the telephone, and it's like traveling back in time. We're going back to the 70s. He did interviews on the telephone, and they didn't sound all that great. It's a little bit difficult to hear in areas, but it's okay. I think you can hear it. Now, Brian is coming off winning the Pitcher of the Month award in the Central League for his work in September. He was 4-0 with a 1.00 ERA, and it was his second time winning this award, and he was really good for the Carp in that stretch where they clinched the playoff spot. I mean, it was a big deal for them.
It was, and I think, the interview's kind of fun, and I'm looking forward to hearing it again. I've heard it before. I guess it's kind of a spoiler alert. I know what he says.
Good man. I'm glad you... Thank you for alerting us all to that.
I'll make it sound like I'm listening to it here in the studio at Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast Plaza Annex.
What is this annex place you speak of, Spartacus?
I don't merit the main studio. I have to be, I'm in the outbuilding.
Well, you come over anytime, buddy. How's that?
Well, I appreciate that.
The lovely studios of Shakujikoin welcome you.
Indeed. Well, however miles away they are, according to John's feet.
All right, well, getting back to Brian, he was a number one.
Where did that go astray? Okay.
Yeah, number one overall draft pick in the major leagues, and he signed with the Pittsburgh Pirates after his junior year of college. And in MPB, he's thrown a lot of innings the first 3 years. He's close to 200 innings this year. He was close last year. And what I found interesting, I think it's still the same. He had a 3.23 ERA last year, and it's the exact same right now in his career here. So that's really interesting stuff. And like I said, he didn't have a lot of wins last year, but he's been very good for them this year. 7-14 last year, and they just couldn't manufacture runs for him. And sometimes he didn't pitch well, but other times they didn't get enough runs on the board, and that's why he ended up with a record that looks bad. But he threw 204 innings, or 204.1 innings, that first season of the dead ball. We're going to have to figure out names for these years now. The 2011 dead ball era, the 2012 deader ball era. The numbers.
Well, there are issues there that I don't think the ball was any different, was intentionally any different. So I think we could just call that now is dead ball two. And
well, I was thinking of the half dead ball.
The half dead ball. How about the undead ball?
The zombie ball.
That would. Well, it caused it raked some havoc. So I think that might work.
Chasing bats all over the field. All right, well, let's see what Brian had to say and take a listen to his interview.
All right, joining us this week on the show via telephone is Brian Bullington of the Hiroshima Carp. Thank you very much for taking the time out to talk with us.
Thanks for having me.
And congrats on getting to the postseason for the Carp. I know you guys had a really good stretch in the second half, and it's really nice to have some new blood out there in the CLCS.
Yeah, you know, a lot of things have gone our way through the second half. You know, we've been able to run a nice run, you know, offensively, obviously, in July and August, and then the pitching has kind of kicked in here, you know, the last month, and, you know, we've continued to score enough runs as well. So it's been a good few months of baseball, and, you know, we've been able to kind of put ourselves in a good position.
Well, what was the biggest factor? I know that you guys in the second half had the big seven-game winning streak, that including three straight over the Giants, and your team has pitched well most of the season and played good defense in spots most of the season, but you guys got some big hits, and what was the biggest factor in that stretch?
Well, it's kind of been a little bit of everything. You know, obviously, you know, in order to win consistently, you got to pitch well, play good defense, and get hits for runners in scoring position. And, you know, for the majority of the second half, we've been able to do that. But, you know, I think there was a stretch there where we had nine in a row against the Giants and Tigers, and thought if, you know, we could get through that stretch, you know, 500 even, or, you know, a game over, we'd be in a pretty good spot. We were able to, you know, I think win six out of the nine and sweep the Giants at home. And, you know, that really kind of gave us the momentum to go into Nagoya and, you know, win those first two games to clinch. So, you know, that was a big stretch for us. And, you know, obviously it's nice to be playing your best baseball, you know, when those games matter the most.
And you guys seem to really have put it together. I saw a little air of confidence in games against the Giants, even when Kon Ohtake pitched a really good game. You guys beat them the other day recently at Tokyo Dome. Talk about the feel of the team. How is it feeling for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, winning breeds confidence. So, you know, having a little bit of success, guys kind of feed on that. And, you know, it kind of goes from one guy to the next to the lineup. And, you know, obviously through the rotation and the bullpen as well. You know, you see the guy, you know, the night before, go through a team and have some success, it gives, you know, that next guy, you know, the confidence that he can go out and do the same thing. And, you know, obviously getting the thing where it gets contagious, and, you know, our guys have kind of fed off that. And, you know, early in the season, it seemed like going into places like, you know, Koshin and the Tokyo Dome, we kind of would put in our ears back a little bit, and, you know, we wouldn't play, you know, as aggressive as we needed to, and kind of let things just happen to us. And, you know, I feel like in the second half, we gained a little more of that confidence, and, you know, we're not afraid to go into those places and at least, you know, lay it all on the line. Not that we're going to win every night, but, you know, at least that we go in there and, you know, play as hard as we can and just kind of see what happens.
All right, now you won as the top CL pitcher for September, the monthly MVP award, and you won four games, had a 1.00 ERA. What was the game changer for you in that month?
I think it was just the way I was able to pitch with runners in scoring position, and I think that's, you know, the difference maker. You know, as first starting pitcher, you know, between good starts and bad starts, a lot of times, you know, there's a couple innings where they get the leadoff guy on or have a couple guys on with nobody or one out, and you can work out of those jams. That's going to, you know, give your team a chance to win games. But, you know, when they get those hits, you know, you can dig yourself a hole pretty early. So all those games, I think there were a couple innings, you know, where you had to make pitches and get out of those situations. And, you know, fortunately this month, you know, I was able to do that.
Okay, now the Carp came into this season, I guess, with, you know, you had lost Dennis in the offseason, Freddie Lewis came in, and there were some other changes, but this team is much different from the April squad. What has this season been like for you guys?
Well, it's kind of been finding out, you know, who those guys are that were going to step up. You know, I think, you know, Kikuchi, you know, had some limited experience last year at second base, and, you know, he's been a huge game changer for us in the infield, you know, especially defensively.
We love him. Yeah, Jim and I love that kid, man.
He's all over the place. He's everywhere. He gets, you know, I think he set our record for, you know, most assists defensively, you know, maybe even in the Central League this year. So, he's all over the place. He's diving everywhere. He's got a great arm. And, you know, that's been a huge help for us defensively. And then he's, you know, I think he's hit 10 or 11 home runs now. So, you know, that's been a nice punch for us in the lineup. And, you know, then we lost, you know, Dobayashi, you know, a couple months ago. And, you know, both Kimura and Kokubo have stepped in and have done a really nice job for us, and both offensively and defensively. So that's been a big boost. And then, you know, getting Brad back, you know, a month or so ago, and, you know, the impact he's had offensively from a power standpoint, and, you know, the addition of Key you as well has been huge for us.
Yeah, it's been a bunch of changes, but everything seems to be working for you guys in the positive sense. So that really, that aspect really helps you get to the playoffs. I predicted, I didn't think anybody would be able to go on a little run and get to the playoffs, but you guys did it. Now you're going to play the Tigers in the Climax Series. You guys split your 24 meetings this year, but you guys were 5-4 at Koshien. What's the mentality going in for the three games in that series?
Well, obviously, it's, you know, one of the tougher places to go into in the league. You know, their crowd's, you know, as good as anybody's. It's going to be, you know, there's going to be 40,000 plus there. And, you know, they get pretty loud, but, you know, that's the kind of environment you want to play in the postseason. So, you know, I think everybody's looking forward to that opportunity. You know, we have had a little bit of success there. You know, they're going to pitch you tough. You know, we've had, you know, trouble all year as well as most of the league has, you know, scoring runs. So, yeah, you know, with Messenger, Nomi, Standards, Cujinami, whoever you're going to see, you know, you're going to have to, you know, do your best to scratch out a few runs. And, you know, at times they've had trouble scoring, but they're also a lineup that, you know, 1-9 or at least 8, I guess, you know, they can scratch some hits and they got some guys with power. And, you know, I feel like they're going to be close games, but, you know, at the same time, you never quite know.
No, obviously, if we knew, it changed our lives. Now, besides the obvious of outscoring the Tigers, how do you win this series?
We just go play. You know, we like our chances. Obviously, you know, having Mike Ken in game one, you know, he's the best pitcher in the league. And, you know, we always feel confident in the team when he's on the mound. And then, you know, myself, Ozaki, and Nomura, you know, we feel like we match up pretty well with their rotation. So it's just going to come down to, you know, their performance. It's gone. You know, I think our teams are pretty evenly matched. You know, it's just about who has the better day. So we're going to go out and, you know, try to pound the zone and be aggressive and, you know, just kind of lay it out there and see who wins.
All right, well, my other question is this team ready to move it on in a playoff series, to win a playoff series? I always look at the defense and see how it breaks down late in games, and that's my biggest concern when watching a Carp game.
Yeah, you know, we'll see. I mean, it's somewhere the Carp haven't been in, you know, over 20 years, and obviously this group hasn't done it before, but, you know, I don't think the Tigers have been in the playoffs in a while either, so, you know, I think you get to this point in the season and, you try to simplify things as much as you can. You know, you don't try to change anything that you've been doing. You know, I feel like we've been playing good baseball the last 2 months and, you know, if we can go in and simplify the game and, you know, play the kind of same style that we've been playing, you know, I think we've got as good a chance as anybody.
I think you do too. Good luck with it, bud.
Thanks, I appreciate it.
All right. We'll talk to you again.
All right.
All right, thanks a lot, Brian. I really appreciate you taking the time on a Saturday morning.
It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Brian, and with luck, we'll catch up with you before too long.
Yeah, with luck. Well, for you, I don't think it's going to be that much of a matter of luck, but what stood out in the interview for you?
Well, I think not too much. I mean, the Carp that he sees, we've spoken about this season on a few occasions when we've had brief chats with Brian and the other Carp guys, essentially that the Carp have been a work in progress, and they really gelled after the start of the season.
Mm.
And, you know, we talked about a couple of the key components. I mean, there's two guys. There's a number of Carp players I do like, in addition to the oft-mentioned Yosuke Kikuchi.
Right.
And I mentioned Yoshihiro Maru last week, who's the Central League stolen base leader, and he's got some pop, and he's played some pretty good defense in center field.
Believe in Maru! Oh, sorry, that's my little saying for him. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Okay. And, of course, Jun Hirose, who's long been a favorite of mine, who's got probably the best arm of any regular outfielder in Japan right now.
Right.
In right field, and he had that record for the most consecutive times on base this year. He set the NPB record early in the season. So they've got some good players, and Brian basically spelled out that they're just very confident and eager to go. And, you know, that's looking at the team, that's what I saw as well, that they're not really as they're not as scared as they used to be.
You're going all country on me. Yeah, I mean, obviously he talked about the fact that, well, I brought it up, that those players tend to make some mistakes defensively in the field, especially when the game is on the line. And he said, we'll see. And, yeah, well, everybody says that. I think, obviously, when they want to, when they're talking about competing, you know, they say, well, let's prove it on the field. But we'll see, to me, meant, I took it to be, well, let's see if they can do it.
Well, here's the thing, is the Carp are a better team now than they were in June.
Definitely.
And why they're a better team, I think, is the defense, which was okay. Which was, as we've said, was okay in spots, but it's just turned up a notch. And one of the reasons I think it's turned up a notch is the fact that Shota Dobayashi's bat, you know, he seems to have lost it somewhere this year. If he kept swinging the way he did at the beginning of last season, he'd still be at third base throwing balls away. And the fact that he's no longer there means they've got Kimura there and they've got Uemoto there. Kokobo's there. They got guys who can pick. Now, Kokobo was like a slow shortstop with not much of an arm, but he's a pretty good third baseman. You know, so they've got tons of gloves on this team. Okay, that's one thing. And that's a big difference. I don't think this is not quite a team that's just waiting for the next error to happen anymore. I think they have played a lot of tough games. I think they've played a lot of confident games. So, I think that's the team I see. And as far as being lucky, you know, you go out and play the game and see how it happens. I'm completely in agreement with Brian Bullington on that.
Yeah, I don't think there's any other thing we can do. You know, let's see what they do on the field. I have this site that I found. Well, I found because someone else was following it on Twitter. It's called Let's Enjoy Baseball Data in English. That's the name that they have on the front page.
Oh, and I know that one.
Yeah, and they have the Carp down for 106 errors, which would lead the Central League easily. Mm. And the Yakult Swallows were next with 93. And that's my problem with it. I mean, yeah, they're a different team than they were when we talked about them in seriously competing for a playoff spot in the first half of the season. They've been much better, and that might carry over, but I just, you know, I'm going to look at, you know, I'm not going to be caught up in the moment and say, hey, you know, I really like these guys. I like this guy. They're going to be playing against a pretty good team in the playoffs.
True.
If they win that series, then an even better team. So,
well, I think the thing with the errors is I was just playing with the numbers a little bit when I was coming home on the train. And you know, even if you look at the errors they've made, I decided to break down the season more or less from the start of July, which is more or less the halfway point of the season.
That's correct.
And the number of errors that the Carp made, you know, they still lead the league. They still make more errors than anybody, or at least they make more errors of any of the playoff teams. But they've made 48 errors. Now, I'm not going to count a couple of errors that skipped out of the calculations here, but essentially they made 48 errors. You know, what are they, 104? I think there are 104 on the season through yesterday.
Okay.
Okay.
This site has a 406.
Right, yeah. And they're 48 since the start of July. Which is actually a little bit more than half the season. So they made 56 in about 45% of the season. So they're not bad. I mean, they're credible. And the point that I've made before is that they pick the ball. And they may be the best in terms of just pure fielding ability, of getting to the ball and making throws as opposed to just fielding percentage. They may be have the most raw fielding talent of any team in NPB right now.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I don't think that's the issue. I think the issue is when the game's in tight games and tight situations, will they throw the ball away? And that's all I've ever picked on them about. The number of errors, sometimes you have a lot, and they don't always lead to runs. It just depends on when you make them and what happens if, you know, a teammate can pick you up and you can get through it, or if it costs you a run, or if it doesn't cost you a run.
Well, that happens to everybody. I mean,
and it happens to everybody. It just seems to happen.
It used to happen a lot to the Carp.
Yeah. They've gotten better. And that's why they've been able to win these games in the second half, I think.
Well, I think that's they know it too. I think that's the difference. I think now they're about ordinary in that regards.
Yeah. Now the other thing that Brian said that stood out for me was that he said, obviously a lot of the players on the team haven't been in the postseason, but then he turned the tables and said, look at the Tigers. They don't have many players with a lot of postseason experience.
Well, he said they hadn't been in the postseason for a while, and it's true. It's 3 years since they've been in the playoffs, and they've never gotten to the second round.
Yeah. The last time they went to the Japan Series in 2005, there was no Climax Series, so they went directly to the Japan Series.
Correct. But so the number of players who have experience in the postseason, obviously Fukudome and Nishioka and Toritani. There's quite a few guys who've been in the postseason.
Yeah, there's a lot. And they have a lot of veteran players.
They do. So I don't think that's an issue. I don't think that's really a big issue. More of an issue for the Carp than the Tigers. Koshien has a great home field advantage. But no, I like the Carp chances.
Well, yeah, let's go ahead and talk about the postseason now.
Mm.
You know, we talk about this CLCS coming up, and I look at the Carp and I say, okay, they had this really good stretch. They have momentum, it seems, going into this playoff series. They've been playing much better than the Tigers in terms of scoring consistently, playing good defense, you know, doing the little things, like Brian said, be consistent. Consistent scoring, consistent pitching and defense. Those things are going to keep you in a lot of games, and then maybe if you can get a break here and there, you're going to get enough runs and hold on and win. All right, so I like what they've been doing, but I'm still not impressed with them when they're going up against a team that's better than they are. They have won these games at Koshien, as I said in the interview, and they play okay there, but it's a whole different atmosphere in the playoffs. It's a different game. I think that the biggest thing is that neither one of these managers has any postseason experience either.
Well, they both played
as managers. Managers.
They both played in the Japan Series. Although I think it's going to say a stretch, but I'm pretty sure Kenjiro and Nomura played in the Japan Series, and Wada was a rookie. He was a rookie in 1985 when the Tigers won the Japan Series.
1985, man. There's people listening to this podcast who weren't born in 1985.
So okay, rub it in. No age. We're not going to have any ageism around here. The AARP will be on your butt, Mister.
Well, not me, of course. I was out of high school. But anyway, yeah.
Wow, he was out of high school. Look at that old fogey go.
Settle down there. So yeah, I mean, you know, like I said, I like what they've been doing. But if I'm a betting man, I think I got to bet on the Tigers to get through this postseason. And here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to say I'm going to give the Carp a game, probably game one, because Kenta Maeda is so good. I think that he can help get them through game one, although he wasn't very good today, but maybe he lost focus or something. Anyway, on Sunday he didn't pitch very well. But I'm going to give them that first game, and I'll give them a lead in game two. And then after that, I think the Tigers are going to take game two, and they're going to pull away in game three and win that one and go on to Tokyo.
Well, okay, I'm gonna go here. I'm going to say the Carp are going to be playing the Giants at Tokyo Dome. And the reason for that is I just think that right now they're the best team in the Central League.
Yeah, I think they've been playing great. I think momentum is on their side.
Momentum doesn't mean, you know, momentum,
I know that,
is it doesn't mean anything to me.
Okay, but I mean, they have been playing. They've been playing
they
well.
They did play well. They did play well. And they
have the confidence, I think. They're the guys who feel they're coming to the stadium feeling good. I think the Tigers might be coming to the stadium thinking, I hope we can win. I hope we can win. I hope we can put it together. But I think the Carp are coming to the stadium thinking, okay, let's do this.
No, I think basically they've come to the stadium playing better than everybody in the last 3 months.
Hmm.
They've basically outplayed the league in the last 3 months.
Yeah.
They've outscored the league in the last 3 months. They've hit for more power than everybody except the, you know, they have better power, vastly much better power. Keila Kaihue,
mm-hmm,
and Brad Eldred are the best two power, will be the best two power hitters in that series.
No doubt.
And after them, I think it's a toss up, Maru or Matt Merton. So yeah. That's, the power to me is a big thing.
Yeah.
Okay. The defense, we're talking about three pretty good defensive teams. The Carp have a double side to them. They're really, really good at turning double plays. Which, okay, that's one thing. And on the other hand, you know, we talked about the errors. They're a little more error prone, and you can't say they aren't because they are. But the other thing is that they don't strike people out, so they need the double plays.
Okay.
They are also fairly hard to run against. And they, let's see, opponents stole 26 bases the last 3 months against them, which is the lowest of any of those three teams. The Carp are also, as far as speed, they're faster. I like their matchup. I like them against the Tigers. I also have this, I just haven't seen the Tigers, as far as I know, won one Climax Series game in three tries, so.
And that was against the Dragons a long time ago.
It wasn't the second one. Yeah, they got swept the first year.
Yeah.
So I'm going to stick it. I think the Carp are going to stick it to the Tigers in two games.
Really?
And go to. And yeah, well, you know, it might, you know, who knows.
Do you think Atsushi Nomi is going to start game one, or is it going to be one of the foreign guys?
Jeez. You know, all those guys are really good pitchers. I mean, Messenger and Standridge and Nomi and Fujinami.
Yeah.
Those guys are rock solid. Any of those guys could punch out their lights.
Yeah, I think Nomi's going to get the call in game one. I think he's the veteran guy on the staff.
Well, the Tigers, you're in a no lose situation. All those guys are killers.
Well, the question is who do you want to pitch if it's going to go to three games? Who do you want to throw in that third game?
Probably Randy Messenger.
Yeah, yeah.
And then if you don't, then you start him against the Giants, you know. So
yeah. I hear you, and I think for the Carp, Maeda is going to throw game one. I think Kan Otake is going to throw game two, and I think Bullington would be out there in game three if there's a game three. It's the best of three series,
sure.
And I guess Yusuke Nomura would throw the first game if they were to get through in three games. You would throw the first game.
And there's no problem with that.
They can match up. I agree. They match up there. I just don't think.
I think they're a better team. I think they're a better team than the Tigers. I just don't. I think what the Tigers have right now is that the Carp are a little bit of a mix and match kind of. They're more of a puzzle, and postseason, you know, being a short tournament, it's not really how deep you are, it's how much firepower you can put on the field in terms of, you know, it doesn't matter how well your players work together. It's more about frontline talent. And the Tigers have, I guess, the more developed frontline talent. So that works against the Carp, but I like the Carp's power. I like Hiroshima's power guys. I think they can go yard in at Koshien, which the Tigers frankly can't.
Yeah.
I hear you. I like that.
I'm with you.
I think that they're going to play good defense. I think both sides are going to play good defense. They're going to pitch well. I'm going to say Brad Eldred pops one, Killa pops one, Maru pops one. That's a series.
All right. Well, I don't think they're going to hit that many home runs. These guys pitch really well. I think maybe they'll get one, but I don't think they're going to get that many. Here's the thing about the Carp, though. Tam Nicolaio against the Tigers this year.
Okay.
I got him for 0-1 in eight games, one hold, three saves, 6.2 innings pitched, eight runs, but only two of them earned.
Wow.
But 10 hits, four walks, and a strikeout. So I think even if they get to the ninth inning, I think it's going to be hairy for them to get through. I'm looking at them losing maybe one of these games late, but we'll see.
It could happen. I don't like the Carp bullpen as much as the Tigers. I don't like the Carp pitching depth as much as I like the Tigers. So yeah, I do. Do I think the Tigers could sweep them? Sure. I mean, well, it's three games.
Yeah. All right. Well, you're going with the Carp.
I'm going to go with the Carps.
Okay. In the Pacific League now, this was a great, great race for the Saitama Seibu Lions. They were spunky, they were scrappy, they were scroungy, they were tough.
Scroungy?
Yeah, and then they scrounged for runs.
Oh, okay.
This is my word, scroungy, but, just like scrunchy. I make up all these crazy words anyway. You know, they scrounged for runs.
I think what you ought to do is on the Facebook page, put a little, a Jonicon.
A Jonicon?
like lexicon, but it's a Johnicon. A little, put a little asterisk all next to the John language that gets used on the show so people won't be confusified.
I think that would scare a lot of children, but anyway. In the Pacific League, the Lions have done a great job to come back, despite some of their fans maybe thinking that they were done. They worked their way back into playoff spot, and they were just better than the Hawks down the stretch. And listen, people, it doesn't matter how or what order you win games in, as long as you win the required number. And
yep,
they did. And they won a bunch of games down the stretch by one run. I think they had a stretch here where they won 7 out of 10 games were one-run games, and the other 3 were two-run games, and they won them. They won most of them. So congratulations to them. I think Nabe Q actually did a good job, and I think he did a good job of managing situations, not so much managing games, but when his pitchers got into a little bit of trouble, he made the changes that he had to make. You know, it wasn't always a great change. Sometimes he put in guys you didn't think were going to get the job done, but they gave up hard hit balls, but they were Adam balls, and they got away with it, and they scored enough runs. Okawari, Takeya Nakamura comes back and hits I think he hit 3 home runs late in the season, and they were all pivotal in games, and the last 2 were the difference.
Were
the difference in games, and they both came in late game situations. So what a great job by them to come back. I like the way they competed, and it looks like they're going to play Lotte. And I didn't really pick them to make the playoffs at the beginning of the year. I picked SoftBank, but SoftBank, as we could see down the stretch, they couldn't find the guys on the mound, for starters to get it done. Now, I don't think the Lions had better starters, but they do have a solid 3 guys, in Takayuki Kishi. They have Kazuhisa Makita, and who's the 3rd guy? Ken Togami.
Togami.
And those 3 guys were getting them through, and Nogami played a pivotal role in coming out of the bullpen when he was not working. But I think the biggest thing is that Hideaki Waku, we were talking about zombies earlier, and it made me remember this guy, because I think somebody found a cure for zombie disease, and they injected him because he looks like he's got life out there again.
I think that's just some zombie fresh.
Zombie fresh. I like that. Keep your zombies fresh with zombie fresh.
Well, haven't you wondered how he's pitched 10 straight games in a row? Without showing any sort of signs of any sort of redness in his cheeks?
Undead on the mound.
Could well be.
Yeah, I mean, he's been great out of the pen. 6 games consecutively he has saved. He's pitched in 10, I saw somewhere that it's
10 games in a row today, yeah.
10 games in a row. And he's been very effective, no runs allowed. So, you can't argue with the results. And
nope.
Dennis Sarfati in the setup role has really worked. You know, this team found itself in the last 2 weeks of the season. Of course, it was close enough to be in a position to make that run. And they beat the Hawks when they went head to head. It's a great finish for them. And I think they're going to carry this momentum, and they're going to go into QVC probably. This is not set in stone because Lotte lost on Sunday and they did not lock up the number 2 position in the Pacific League.
Right.
But I think they're going to go into QVC and they're going to push through and take on the Eagles. I think they're going to win in 3 games.
That's an interesting point. There's a couple, you've raised a few points. The Lions indeed are the weak links, you know, they're the weak links in this group in terms of the things they've done on the field and in terms of, you know, how well they've batted and fielded, not even talking about the runs. You know, if you look at the how their opponents have hit them and how they've hit opposing pitching and fielded, and how their opponents have fielded against them.
Mm-hmm.
They shouldn't be anywhere near the pennant race. They shouldn't have scored as many runs as they did.
Yeah.
And then they didn't score all that many to begin with. And then they won a bunch of games. So it's like they were basically the anti-Hawks. The Hawks are a team that basically did everything except put their hits, you know, all their good things happened in big clumps.
Mm.
And the Lions were, the Lions have been lucky. The Lions have been really, really lucky. Now here's the thing. The irony there is that the last couple of years, the Lions have been horribly unlucky.
Yeah.
And they were, you know, they were the last 2 years, they were within a win or so of clinching the Interleague title in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And then last year they were, 2011, they were with an inch of clinching the league title. And, you know, we had that story about Jose Fernandez and the team telling him, nobody telling him that the last game of the season was going to decide the pennant. He thought the pennant was decided in the playoffs. So he was swinging for the fences when he could have driven in the go-ahead run from second base with a slider that came outside. He tried to pull it over the fence to see if he could get a couple of RBIs.
Yeah.
And then when he popped that thing up to second base or grounded out or something, made an easy out to second, and it was basically the end of the game. He couldn't understand why his teammates were crying.
Yeah.
Because that's what they do in Japan anyway. But you know, it was that kind of thing. It was like everything that could go wrong did go wrong, and everything this year that doesn't deserve to be going right has been going right.
In fact, even with Takuya Nakamura being able to come back and being productive, that's been lucky for them too, and he's been making contact, which is surprising.
Well, here's another thing, and I'll tell you, one of the weird things about the Lions. Now, okay, I'll be honest. He's a player I haven't really liked a lot since maybe his first couple of years, who is Yasuyuki Kataoka.
Mm.
Okay. He became a star in about his third season, and he kind of a big head, and he got pretty arrogant. He got arrogant towards the media.
Mm.
His teammates tell me that's not the way he is, and I noticed the last year or so, him kind of coming down off of that a little bit, at least him being friendlier and being more approachable.
Right.
And, but, you know, regardless of what you think of him as a player, and I don't think he's a low on base percentage guy, but he's a pretty good fielder, and he's had a lot of injuries the last couple of years, but there's something about him. He and the Lions have a kind of chemistry. When he's on the field, they seem to play better. Now, it wasn't just Nakamura who came back. Kataoka came back. They basically hadn't played the whole season. So Nakamura's back, and he's beginning to find the distance. And Kataoka's been playing really well. And I think that is a part of what makes this Lions team click. That being said, the things I don't like about the Marines are their defense.
Yeah, I'm having problems with their rotation. I think it's going to be Takuya Furuya, Tomohisa Ohtani, and Yuki Karakawa. Maybe Seth Greisinger is going to get a throw out there. I don't know if he's healthy enough. Yoshihisa Naruse, I don't think he's going to be back in time for the playoffs. I don't like their starting pitching. And then their bullpen has been pretty effective, but how many innings can these guys throw every day?
Well, I mean, it's three games.
Yeah,
pressure pack games. They could send Mossad out there two innings apiece. That's what I'd do.
Yeah.
But as far as Furuya, I have no problems with Furuya.
Yeah, he's been really good. 9-1.
He's just like if they starting to look for the he starts him out with one pitch. He's basically got three really good pitches. He's got great command of his fastball. He's got a pretty good curve, and he's got a really good changeup. Okay. And when one of those, you know, off speed things ain't working, he goes to the other one.
Mm.
And then when they're looking for that, you know, and because they're seeing all this slow stuff, then he busts people with this, you know, 88 mile an hour fastball.
Yeah.
And he's hard to pick up. And, that changeup has just made him into a devastating pitcher this year.
Yeah.
So, I have, you know, people have been seeing him now for the past five months. And he came out, they made him a starter in the Eastern League this year, and he threw a no-hitter.
And then he came within one out of throwing a no-hitter at Oryx, I think it was, down in
Japan. It was Oryx. It was in his Pacific League debut this season, his second career start. He retired the first 26 guys. They're going like, who is this guy?
And then he stopped to tie his shoes and then gave up a hit. But anyway, moving right along.
I like him, but the rest of them I don't. I like the, with Nakamura back, I'm going to say their power's about even, but the defense and pitching ain't right now. Jeez, I think I do like the Marines offense. I don't like their defense. It's a toss up, but I'm going to stick with the Lions. I think the Lions are going to make it. Because of that Kato, that little X factor. I mean, there's no logic, you know, for people who are used to my trying to be logical and rational.
You're going
to
say that they have more heart? Is that what you're going to say?
No, I'm going to say that they've got better chemistry, though, I think, right now.
Chemistry, heart, I'll take it.
Okay.
I like it.
I don't have an explanation for it. It's probably not valid, but that just seems to be the way it has been. I don't like Kato as a player. I wouldn't want him on my team, to be honest, but boy, he seems to be a part of the team, an intrinsic part of that team.
Yeah. I see one of the games going to extra innings, and I think that's the game that the Marines are going to push home a run, maybe in the 13th inning or something to get through, but I think the Lions are going to win it, and I think we're going to see them go up to Tohoku.
I think that's going to be a fun series.
Yeah, it should be.
I'm really looking forward to covering that one.
All right, well, something else that we're looking forward to, maybe moving right along here, is Hirohi Kokubo becoming the Samurai Japan manager. Now, this was...
What's up with that?
I woke up to reports on GG, and then I went over to Sports Hochi, one of the daily sports newspapers, and I looked at their internet site, and I'm like, what's this all about? I mean, this guy just got out of the game as a player. He doesn't have any experience coaching. He might have some experience pushing around or beating or bullying or mentally tormenting younger players on his team, but that's completely different from actually coaching them and trying to get guys to implement a game plan in a game situation. And I don't know. MPB said it wants to revamp the team and go with younger players and the youth movement, and this is the way to go. He's the most suitable person to take over a young team. The young players can identify with him because he just left the game as a player. The one thing I can say is that he's a guy who started out as a power hitter and hit a bunch of home runs and doubles and then turned into a singles hitter. So he can bring experience from both approaches
right.
to these players. He can bring that to the table. But I would think just as young and just as dynamic a person is Kazuyoshi Tatsunami, Mr. Dragon, and he would have made an excellent manager because he's been a coach with the team last year, and he worked wonders with Sho Nakata and got that, you want to talk about zombies at the plate, he got that thing into a working piece of art, if you ask me, for this season. The guy who hit a career high in home runs, mm-hmm. and he hasn't even played the whole season, so he's been out with a broken hand, he just came back. So, what is it, the assistant secretary general of MPB, is it Shoji Numasawa,
yep.
And he's the one
Numasawa,
who said,
yep.
Yeah, he said the biggest thing is he brings a fresh perspective. And I'm like, well, you know, I could do that. Pick me. I can be a professor. I got no experience coaching
or managing, They'd be cracking up.
I'll be the mood maker, the mood making manager.
Mood maker, that's important. You could maybe the Bay Stars acted too quickly. They could have you manage.
So what do you think of this thing here?
Kokubo, yeah, well, I mean, here's the thing. We wanted somebody whose experience and character are beyond reproach.
Oh, Yozo Kato.
Well, we can go on there again.
No, I'm
not. Okay. Just checking. Okay.
Check. Flashback.
Now, Kokubo's experience. Okay. Well, look at it this way. Okay. Now, Japan's first two WB. First thing is they've hired these managers in a panic. Although Haro was apparently set up to be the second WBC manager sometime in advance.
Hmm.
They had no clue. Kato came in and said, we're going to get this thing sorted out. And he dawdled and fuddled about and twiddled his thumbs and did this and that. And
when he was there.
And he tried to get, he tried to get Hoshino to manage right after Hoshino had basically bombed in Beijing as the Japan manager at the Beijing Olympics. And Hoshino said, are you crazy? I don't want nothing to do with managing right now.
Yeah.
So they picked O because Hoshino wouldn't take the job.
Mm.
And then they picked Hara, I think, because the Yomiuri wanted, basically begged him to do it. Now, both of those guys at that point had won 3 pennants in their leagues and were active. O had won in 99 and 2000 and in 2003. Hara had won in 2002. 2007, he didn't go to the Japan Series, but he won the pennant. And 2008. Okay, then they decided, well, we can't have an active manager, so, hey, who's that guy around there who's not moving? Is that Koji Yamamoto? Didn't he used to manage? Get him.
Yeah,
get him over
here.
He's
too slow to run.
Exactly, he was too slow to run away. Well, he had only... He had won 1 league pennant. He had never won a Japan Series. He hadn't had a winning record in he hadn't finished in the top 3 in a league in, I think, 17 years.
Yeah.
So,
well, yeah.
So they picked this guy who was really out of the loop, and then they figured, well, that was a bad decision to get a guy who hadn't managed in a long time. So let's have a guy who's never managed.
Yeah, let's make a worse decision. I don't know if it's a worse decision. We won't know that. He might turn out to be good. But I just think that they're grasping at straws, and this kind of proves it. And
I think they again went to somebody who would be popular. That no, you know, it's like the MVP vote, and they just keep dragging beaten dead horses. You know, they're picking somebody that they won't be blamed for.
Mm.
They're picking somebody that people will go along with because he's popular, as opposed to, well, let's think about who's the best guy. But the interesting thing in here is the idea of picking a national team manager for 4 years is, I think, a good idea.
I thought so, too. I thought that was a good idea. But what if along the way... You don't like what he's doing. You have a philosophical difference with the guy, or you're
then
not
you
sure.
Get a new man. Then you get a new manager.
But I don't think that's what they're planning to do. And you know that in Japan, once you get someone, the loyalties win over, regardless of the results, for the most part.
Well,
in this situation, it would.
In this situation, perhaps. But you know, we're going to have. I think there's going to be the Premier 12 competition the year after next in 2015. And he's going to have to win that.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't win it, he probably will be the ex-manager.
Okay. All right. Well, good luck to them with that. Now, we had a retirement rush this last 10 days of the season where a bunch of guys crawled out and said, you know, I'm going to retire too. It's like everybody is like somebody, you know, I need a volunteer to retire. And everybody's hands started going up around the room.
Wow. What are they afraid that if they didn't retire, they might shoot the excess bodies laying around?
Maybe.
It is odd. It is odd because, as you know, John and I were talking before we started recording this, you know, usually not that many people retire. You know, the guys, so many of the guys who retire, there will be a lot of more guys retiring in January, let's put it that way, when they don't get any job offers. But now, you know, people don't retire. They go play in the independent leagues, or they go play in the Dominican Republic or someplace, or they go play in Taiwan, or they go play in Korea. You know, if you took an independent league and shook it, you get a lot of guys who thought were retired.
Look at that. That guy's still alive. Hey, used to be famous.
I mean, you could take the Ishikawa Million Stars and, oh gosh, there's Masao Kida. We thought he was living in Argentina or something. And wait, there's a bunch of guys, and the same thing in the Shikoku Island League. There's all these guys who, as John said, used to be famous.
Well, I'm looking around, and I mean, every night there's retirement ceremony games, and guys.
Retirement games?
They're playing in the field where they're not supposed to be playing. They haven't been used all season.
The season is over. I mean, everything's been decided except the
finals.
The
batting title. But we had Shigeyuki Furuki of the Giants came out this past week.
Did he get a retirement game?
I don't think he got a game. I think he just gets, I don't think he's been really on the first team that much anyway. I don't think they were going to give him a game. And then
they'll give him a retirement pinch hit.
Yeah, well, they gave him a retirement flower bouquet.
yeah, probably.
Yasuhiko Yabuta of the Marines, he and Shingo Ono had a dual ceremony thing. Shige Nobushima of the Lions also came out late, and Masaaki Koike of the Bay Stars and Chunichi Dragons, and all these guys just came out. I don't remember seeing this many guys come out and have speeches at the end of the season. I don't know about you, but I do know this, that I really liked Shinya Miyamoto's ceremony, and it was touching how he, I thought it was particularly good how he went around and described what each of his managers bestowed upon him while he's been playing. You know, he said, this manager gave me that, and this manager told me that, and this manager taught me that. But that was pretty neat. I thought Tomonori Maeda's ceremony was nice, except that he just seemed, just like you described, it just seemed so distant and kind of tight and wound up and not, you know, he was half emotional but half trying to keep himself to compose, but you know, he didn't want to show the emotion.
I'll tell you, I the interesting thing about Maeda's ceremony was, well, actually, Maeda's retirement is when they were playing the Tigers, one of his former coaches, actually kind of a famous coach, his name is Mizutani, his first name escapes me. I've spoken to him briefly, played for the Carp in their pennant winning year, their first pennant winning year in 1975, and he's famous for being a draconian, brutal coach, but he's the guy who was a big part in teaching some really big players, Kanemoto and Maeda and Tatsunami and Fukudome,
mm-hmm.
teaching these guys the ropes. And he's kind of got into trouble because he's one of these brutal guys who believes in brutal practices and stuff, but he's one of these old school, really old school guys. And these two met before the last Tigers Carp game, you know, they had to bring out the mops.
Oh gosh. I love you, man. You taught me so much. I love you.
Well,
man.
You
worked so hard for me. I'm so proud of you. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, but you know, that part, that touched me.
Yeah.
Sorry. I apologize, but.
It's all right. Yeah. I liked, Takeshi Yamasaki's speech because he was so smooth, so happy. I mean, he made this great joke. He says, hey, look, before I came out here for the night's game, I think they started him at first base, and I think he played the entire game. I can't remember, but.
Got a hit, too.
And he said, you know, before the game, he said, you know, I can still play. Yeah, I can still do this. And then he said, yeah, I went out there and I played tonight, and I'm really tired. I'm ready to quit.
Well,
it's just so nice, you know.
It
so,
was his retirement was the fun, was perhaps the most. It was like Kokubo's last year. It took his team by surprise.
Mm.
The team was insulted. You know, they sent him down. This was another master managerial personnel move by Morimichi Takagi. Sent him down to the farm team without really thinking about it much. And he announced his retirement, and Takagi blew a gasket. What does he mean, retiring? You know, he's going to tell me he's going to retire if I do that. How dare him?
Yeah, well, Takagi also said, I'm sorry for making the or for ruining, you know, the good winning Dragon streak that they had going, because he's come. They lost to every. They had a losing record to every team in the Central League. I mean, even, he should be the one who had the retirement ceremony.
Well, he's going to have his press conference on a Tuesday.
All right. Well, hopefully that comes sooner than later. Let's go to fielding questions. All right. Our question this week is from Dave in Baltimore. Dave sent this question in about 2 weeks ago. We weren't able to get it on last week, so I'll read exactly what it says, but it's about 2 weeks old. I was very disappointed to hear Isao Harimoto's comment on this week's show where he said that Sadaharu Oh would have hit many more home runs if he'd gotten to hit the juice ball that's currently in use. Didn't Oh get to use some sort of compressed bat that is now outlawed in NPB? Wouldn't it be fair to ask how many home runs Vladimir Ballantyne would have hit if he got to use the same kind of bat Oh did? P.S. Robert Whiting for NPB commissioner? it's only slightly less likely than OCI.
I think, thank you, Dave. I think it's vastly more unlikely than OCI.
I'd vote for
OCI. I'd love to see Bob as commissioner, and I know he would probably tell me to be quiet and mind my own business. But, yeah, great question, Dave. What do you got to say for that, John?
Me, I don't have any knowledge about the bet, but I can tell you this. If those guys played in the same era, obviously Vladimir Valentin would knock a lot more home runs than O, but I think O would still make the contact that he did, because you look at the strikeouts for Vladimir and you compare them to O's strikeouts. I think Vladimir's still a little bit, the strikeout rate is high, but I didn't look at the old numbers. I'm looking them up as we speak. But I don't know about the bat, per se.
Okay, yeah. The bat was, O's bat was outlawed. It was legal at some point when he started using it, and it was basically outlawed when he retired. But it's a great question. Could he have hit more? No, I don't know there's any evidence that the bat actually helped, but it may well have. You know, that's one of those things. But as I mentioned in the past couple of weeks, and it's worth saying again, the ball is not juiced. What's juiced is Jingu Stadium. Jingu Stadium is a great home run park. And, you know, here's the thing is normally when you play in a great home run park, the big home run hitters aren't helped by them as much because they tend to hit the ball farther, right? So if you can hit the ball really far on a regular basis, if you really drive it a lot, you're not going to see that big of a gap playing in a park with short fences as a park with long fences, because you're going to drive them far, well over the fence.
Right.
But this year, Ballantyne had an enormous home run advantage playing at Jingu. He hit basically 50% or close to 50% of his home runs on the road in road games the last 2 years. And this year, boy, he learned to hit them fly balls into Jingu's.
Yeah.
He learned to do that, and that was a part of that thing. I think he learned that if he made contact, he could hit those things into the second row at Jingu. And that was a big thing. I mean, he still pummeled that ball now and then, but I think he learned that just making some sweet contact, he could hit some home runs with that short fence at Jingu.
Yeah, and I think the one thing is he didn't get cheated. He didn't hit a lot of balls over the fence at Jingu. I remember when he got to numbers 56 and 57 in a game at that game at home, they showed every home run that he had hit on the news. Mm. And only a couple, three of them maybe were just over the fence at Jingu.
Right.
Most of them were way over and way deep,
right,
and he really clubbed them. So it wasn't like he was getting those Jingu home runs where people just make good solid contact and it's hot and the wind is blowing and all that stuff. But let me talk about some of the strikeouts that Sadahata Oh had. In 1960, he had 130 games, 101 strikeouts, and that was the high for his career.
Mm. What year was that?
That was 1960.
Okay, and this is when he's a 20-year-old kid, and he still hasn't found himself as a hitter. So this is a different era, too.
You're right. You know?
And part of the thing is, when O was a big reason, if O had come along, you know, 3 or 4 years later, he probably would have hit a lot more home runs. Because it was I hate to say that, he was never a follower, but the game caught up with him. He would have been he would have been less of an outlier, because home runs, particularly in the Central League, were sort of looked upon with a little bit of disdain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like you shouldn't try to hit home runs. They weren't artful.
Right.
The 50s were a really dead ball era, particularly in the Central League. People liked the home runs, but they weren't artistic like sacrifice bunts and things like that.
Right. Okay. Well, yeah, just before we wrap up, Ballantyne, he struck out 131 times in 2011, 92 last year, and 105 this year. So different kinds of hitters. All right. Great question. We're looking forward to more questions and MP3s from you guys. Please send them to yakyujohn@gmail.com or leave us a note on the Facebook page like Claudio in Toronto. Thanks a lot, Claudio.
Yep. Thanks for that. Please send your MP3s questions, because we would not only would we love to hear from you, but all of our other listeners would like to hear your opinions as well. All right. Well, we will be talking to you a week from now, and with good luck, both of the first stage of the Climax series will be over, and we can talk about them in completion. But you know, who knows? There may be some Game 3. So anyway, we will be talking to you next week. So
enjoy your baseball.